Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today we've got a bunch of movies to talk about. We've got Chappie, Unfinished Business, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, and the smaller, more independent films Road Hard and Buzzard. Let's also talk about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD Roundup. But first, before we move on to that, this is how you can get in touch with me. If you want to email me, you can catch me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You can also find me personally on Twitter at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's move right into the news. The first thing I want to do, I missed this last week because it had happened right after the show went out, and it is the death of Leonard Nimoy. Rest in peace. He died at 83 from chronic pulmonary disease. And he's a legend in the Star Trek universe. I mean, he's a legend just in science fiction. He didn't just do Star Trek. And of course, everyone focuses on Spock. And throughout last weekend and into early this week, we had people posting clips from Star Trek II, which is, of course, where Spock, spoiler alert, in the movie over 30 years old, that's the movie where Spock dies at the end. And of course, then they come back in the search for Spock. Originally, it was supposed to be the death of Spock, and that's it. But it was such a popular movie, and it did so well and revitalized Star Trek back in 1982 that they, of course, did Star Trek 3, 4, and it's continued into, what, like 11 movies or something like that, when you count the new ones? He has shown up in almost every single Star Trek movie that's ever been made, with the exception of the Next Generation ones that they did. But, of course, he showed up in Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams movie, and Star Trek Into Darkness. He had a brief little cameo. It's sad to see him go. I mean, he was 83, and he was getting up there in age. You could even tell when you saw him in the last two Star Trek movies that he was getting older, and it's a shame to see him go. And I realize that I have spent most of my adult life watching the cast and people involved in Star Trek just leaving us. I mean, Gene Roddenberry in the early 90s, and then of course we had James Doohan and we had DeForest Kelly. It's kind of sad because even though I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, I grew up with Star Trek, watching it in reruns. I remember coming home from school and catching it on TV. So it was as an integral part of my life as it was to people who grew up in the 60s, because I also remember when the movies came out. I have seen almost every Star Trek movie in the theater, going all the way back to Star Trek The Motion Pictures 2, 3, 4, all the way. I think the only one I haven't seen in the theaters initially was Star Trek Insurrection. I think that was the only one I did not see in the actual theaters. Everything else I've seen in the theater. So it's sad to see him go. Also, Harvey Bennett, who was integral to bringing Star Trek II to the big screen and revitalizing the Star Trek franchise and co-writing Star Trek III, The Search for Spock and The Voyage Home. He passed away this week as well. So it's a sad time in the Star Trek universe. You will be missed very greatly, Leonard Nimoy and Harvey Bennett. On a less somber and depressing note, something that's happening also in the science fiction realm. Many people who know me know I'm a total science fiction geek. And one of my favorite things to do, going all the way back to high school, is they would have, at a local theater, the Drexel Theaters in Columbus, Ohio, they would have a 24-hour science fiction movie marathon. And in the spring and then in the fall, they'd have a 24-hour horror movie marathon. I've talked about these before. We have the Ohio 24-hour science fiction movie marathon, number 32, this 32nd one that they've done, is going to be at the Drexel Theater in Bexley, Ohio, March 14th and 15th, on Pi Day and the Ides of March. We have the Science Fiction Marathon, 24 hours of them, $40 in advance, $45 at the door. You go to scifimarathon.com. You can order the tickets online. It's a great event. And one of the things that makes this event great isn't just the movies that they show, because they got a great lineup. I'm going to hit that real quickly in a second. But they also show all these interstitials. They have trailers. They have cartoons. They have short subjects. It's not just a dozen or so movies. it's all these little bits and pieces that make going to the movie special. And this is why this is a unique event. They do 24-hour marathons in Cleveland. They do one in Boston. They do one in Philadelphia. I know they have 24-hour or all-night events in Chicago with some drive-ins. What makes this one unique is all the cool little bits and pieces, the bells and whistles that wrap the movie up. It is not just the films, because anybody can just watch those themselves. It's the crowd experience, but also the interstitials and the bits and pieces and that sort of thing. The lineup this year is on the theme women in science fiction, and it's bookended by Alien and Aliens. So, of course, you got Sigourney Weaver's. The other movies in order, after Alien, there's going to be Doctor Who and the Daleks, the 1963, I think, Peter Cushing movie, which isn't canon to the TV show, but it's interesting, and full color Daleks. Shadows on the Wall, which is a Midwest premiere. I don't know much about that. Barbarella, which is a bonkers movie and should play really well at that time. Then Time Lapse, which is an Ohio premiere. Then there's Blade Runner, the final cut, which I've never seen that version of it. That'll be neat to see on the big screen. Earth Girls Are Easy. And then you're getting into the late night movies with Lucy and Hardware, a cyberpunk film from the 90s, The Wasp Woman, which is a Roger Corman film, and of course wrapping things up with Aliens. So this looks like a great time. Go to scifimarathon.com if you want to join in the fun. Like I said, $40 to get all that stuff is a really good price. And that's really it. There's no other huge new movie news, and we might hit a couple of these stories next week, but I had to cover my sci-fi love, people. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means that we are rolling into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Ex Machina, which is a film about artificial intelligence and robotics. And this seems to be covering a lot of stuff right now because we got Chappie coming up we're going to be talking about here. But this one is one of those more cerebral science fiction movies, opening on April 10th.
How do you feel about it?
Her AI is beyond doubt.
No, nothing analytical. Just how do you feel?
I feel that she's amazing.
Do you want to be my friend?
Of course.
Will it be possible?
Why would it not be?
Did you know that Nathan brought me here to test you?
You shouldn't trust anything he says.
This one looks interesting simply because I love science fiction. I love AI stories. I love ideas of human beings creating something that's supposed to be good and it goes horribly awry. And that's what this looks like. It's also got some good actors in it. It's got Domhnall Gleeson. It's got Oscar Isaac. This looks like it is going to be a more cerebral film. And it's released by A24. If you remember last year, A24 did some really innovative science fiction stuff. They did Under the Skin, and they did Enemy. There were some really neat things that came out of A24, so I'm looking forward to what they have to give us in Ex Machina on April 10th. The next one I want to talk about is Selfless, which opens on July 31st. Here is the trailer.
We offer humanity's greatest minds more time to fulfill their potential. Designed to offer you the very best of the human experience.
It's alive.
An empty vessel.
If we do this, there's no turning back. Your old life is over.
This wasn't a hallucination.
Daddy!
Immortality has some side effects.
What's interesting about this one is they've done a really interesting viral marketing campaign where they sent me, I got a phone. It felt like the Matrix. I literally was given this, mailed a phone that said activate, and it started giving me text messages from a place called Phoenix Biogenics. And this is the fictional company from the movie. But what happens is they send me texts periodically that update. And of course, it went to the trailer. But it's treating it like, hey, you can have your own new body. You are now going to go off in your consciousness. Will live on. But you're going to get a brand new body and a brand new life. It's a really clever thing. Plus, I got a really neat little phone out of the whole deal. You go to outlive.life. Outlive Life. That is the website, and you can check that out. Check out my Instagram at Fat Guys at the Movies. You'll see some of the things that they've sent me. This is a neat promotion. It's by Tarsem, who did movies like Immortals and The Cell. So he has some pretty interesting ideas, and he's a pretty intense director. We'll see what happens with this movie. It looks kind of interesting, but the phone's cool too. All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Unfinished Business and the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. discovers something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you. We are rolling right into the movie reviews. We're going to start off with Unfinished Business, or as the kids might say, Unfinished Bidness. Did I just become my father at that moment? Did I just become as uncool as my father trying to emulate a younger generation? I remember when I was a kid, my dad would be like, oh, is that kid at school? Does he think he's a real cool dude? And I'm like, Dad, they never talk like that. And I'm sure I sound equally as ridiculous to my children when I try and talk like a rapper, which does not happen often. I will set your mind at ease. I am not out there trying to bust a rhyme with anybody. I'm just an idiot. That's all there is to it. Anyways, let's talk about an idiotic movie, which is Unfinished Business. This may not be a bad thing. Idiocy is not necessarily a bad thing if it's done right. In Unfinished Business, three salesmen in a startup company have to travel to Germany to seal a deal, only to find themselves in competition with their former boss.
This deal may not be done.
Dan, this is Chuck Portnoy. I think you know, don't you?
Those pants are so tight. Is that a crease?
No, I don't have a crease, thank you. You're telling me we're bankrupt?
If we don't close this deal.
Well, you're the little guy taking on the big guy.
You're going to go up against me and Dynamic Systems.
We're going to be hard to beat. The first rule is show the client a good time. The second rule.
How you doing? I'm here for a meeting.
Forget all the other rules.
You okay, Dan?
I'm not crying. That's just poison in my eyes.
Before I even start about talking about the movie, what I find interesting is Sienna Miller plays Vince Vaughn's previous boss, and her character's name's Chuck. I'm assuming it's a nickname for Charlene and within the context of the film. She's actually in there very little. She just shows up to antagonize him here and there. But what I find interesting and some weirdly progressive about this movie is the boss, who's the cutthroat businessman named Chuck, is actually a woman. And as you watch it, because so many times people will say, and this is almost borderlining on cliche, they say, oh, well, when it's a strong woman, people say they're difficult to deal with. In fact, even Monique, the actress Monique, who won an Academy Award for her role in Precious, based on her novel Push by Sapphire, she has claimed to be blackballed in Hollywood because she's been difficult to work with because she refused to do extra promotion for the junket of Precious, like going to the South of France for the Cannes Film Festival because she wasn't going to be compensated. I'm sure her expenses would have been paid. And they say, oh, when a woman acts like that, she's considered difficult to deal with, or the expletive that is often associated with that. And when a man does it, a man is just being hard-nosed. No, whether or not this character was played by a woman or a man, this character is a jerk. And it's interesting to see a woman in that role, because we're almost conditioned against saying what a jerk she is, what a you know, B-word she is. And that's interesting to me because she is a jerk in the movie. She is a terrible person, and she's elitist, and she's cutthroat in a bad way, in a mean way, and she's not the hero at all. But, I mean, it's almost like you're afraid to say that about the character, but it's weirdly progressive to have this role being played by a woman and not it just be completely sexual. That's neither here nor there for the rest of the movie. I mean, Sienna Miller is just very minor in this movie, and none of her spouses get killed in this film, like, which is what made her kind of famous a little bit last year with the two movies she was in. Now, in this film, it's all about Vince Vaughn and his sidekicks, which are Dave Franco and Tom Wilkinson. At its core, it's just a screwball, raunchy, stupid comedy. Idiocy can work, and it does in this movie. It works really well at times. David Franco is hilarious in this film, sometimes borderlining on offensive. It's really hard to figure out whether he's just kind of a simple kid or whether he's like mentally challenged. They really get close to that in the movie. And Tom Wilkinson, who's very funny, and you don't think of him as being funny because he's mostly remembered for playing respectable roles. He's funny and he's kind of a sex pervert, which is cool. I mean, hey, you know, fly your freak flag. You know, hey, as long as you're not causing harm to anybody. It's got its heart there, and it's in that realm of sort of like Wedding Crashers or The Hangover, where it is a raunchy comedy. But then it institutes this bit of heart in there, which is awkward at times, because Vince Vaughn's getting older. I mean, he's like pushing 50 or so, and he is more and more, you're seeing him play an adult with kids. In fact, I remember when the Watch came out a couple of years ago, he had kids and it was dealing with children, him having being a parent. This one also deals with that. He has to keep calling back home to his wife because his kids are getting bullied at school. That gets in the way a little bit. It's not too much of a distraction, but the story should be about him trying to seal this deal in Germany. And it works. You know what? The thing is, this is a funny movie. It has some funny moments. It's not great. I wouldn't go pay $15 to go see this movie, you know, but I'd pay $5 on a matinee to see it. It's fun. It's short. It's silly. It's goofy. And it has some bit parts with Nick Frost. He's very funny in it. James Marsden plays a pretty good role in it. It's got a good cast. And I think it's getting a little bit unfairly maligned because it's kind of falling in under the radar. And Vince Vaughn has had some struggles lately, and this is better than like The Internship. It's R-rated. It's definitely R-rated. Leave the kids at home. But you know what? I had to say, I kind of laughed. So Unfinished Business kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. The residents of the best exotic Marigold Hotel in India deal with more interpersonal issues while the hotel owner tries to secure a new property for franchise opportunities.
The Marigold Hotel is full up, so we have to expand.
A chain of hotels stretching across India and beyond for those such as this great lady who had the chance to say, why die here when I can die there?
Ladies and gentlemen, let us travel to the new jewel in my crown, the pearl in my oyster, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
The first best exotic Marigold Hotel came out about 3 years ago, and it was counter-programming to The Avengers. This one is very close to The Avengers, although it's not coming out on the same weekend. It's as much of a sequel as it can be. Everyone's back. Well, the ones that didn't die from the first film. There's some characters that passed on at the end of the first film, but the rest of them are back, and you've got a brilliantly great British cast. You got Judi Dench, you got Bill Nighy, you got Maggie Smith. There are some awesome actors in this movie, and that's what makes these films work. That's what worked in the last one. I wasn't terribly interested in what was going on with their lives, but Judi Dench and Bill Nighy, when they share the screen, they're just so charming together. They could be talking about what they're going to go buy at the store, and it's still going to be a charming film to watch. And that's where the real strength is here. And it's directed by John Madden, who directed the first one. So it's really kind of the gang getting back together. It really feels like an extension. You could almost edit the two movies together seamlessly. The stumbling points on this one is they bring in Richard Gere as an American wild card in this. And you know, I don't hate Richard Gere, but he's not the American Bill Nighy, I'll tell you that. And he's not terribly interesting. And then, like they did with the first one, they focus a lot on Dev Patel's character, and he's planning a wedding. He, as an actor, is not nearly as compelling and interesting as the old British folks. They spend a lot of time on him, and that's when the movie kind of gets boring to me. But then again, I am not the target market. I need to be about twice my age to be the target market. If you are in that target market, it's perfectly charming. You're going to love it. If you like the first one, you're going to like this one. It's not as good. It's a little forced at times because it's a sequel for a movie that wasn't meant to have a sequel, but it's still a decent film. I'm going to say the second best exotic Marigold Hotel kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Chappie and Road Hard.
Open Gangnam Style.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies, rolling on into the movie reviews. Let's continue down the road with Dev Patel. There's some interesting things happening in this weekend. Dev Patel, who seemed to have been weirdly silent for the last couple of years. This guy was in the biggest movie of whatever, 2008, 2009, something like that, whenever Slumdog Millionaire came out. And he should have really broken out. And his big breakout performance was in The Last Airbender, which was terrible. And then he did The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, and then he disappeared. And well, he's back for not only this, he's in Chappie, too. So he's in two movies. And what's interesting is also Tom Wilkinson, who's in Unfinished Business, was in the first Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, but I think his character died. You have these people kind of competing with themselves in the marketplace. It's odd. It's a bizarre little twist of casting and fate. But in terms of Chappie, starring Dev Patel and Charlton Copley and Hugh Jackman and Sigourney Weaver, Neil Blomkamp directs this film about a police robot that is reprogrammed with artificial intelligence.
You are Chappie.
Chappie.
It's like a child that has to learn.
What's that? Chappie's book?
Yeah, it's yours.
Chappie's got stories. Chappie's got a book.
Anything you want to do in your life, you can do.
Write poetry, have original ideas.
Chappie wants to paint.
Even a robot's a big problem for me.
Thinking robot could be the end of mankind.
Destroy that robot. Burn it to ash.
There are a lot of familiar elements to this film. There's a huge RoboCop influence here. Almost to the point that I think they make the voices of these police robots sound like Peter Weller. And the monster, bulky assault robot that Hugh Jackman creates looks almost exactly like the Ed 209 from the original RoboCop. If you remember, that was the giant electric razor looking robot that fell down the stairs. This is actually a better RoboCop remake than RoboCop was last year. But this also has roots in a lot of the other elements of Neil Blomkamp's stuff. You see a lot of District 9 showing up in this film because he's from South Africa and Johannesburg is very much riddled with poverty. And so he shows the darker side of Johannesburg and the dangerous side and the drugs and the violence and the weapons, which to somebody from America, yeah, there's some bad stuff happening in America. There are some really awful things happening in sort of the inner city areas of this country. You compare it to South Africa and it's alarming how rough it can be in South Africa. And I think that's one of the things District 9 revealed, all the problems about the slums of South Africa that we don't see. With that said, I'd like to see Neil Blomkamp do a movie that wasn't taking place in South Africa. I mean, he's sort of, I think, mined Johannesburg as much as he can. Even though Elysium takes place in Los Angeles, it's basically Los Angeles that has transformed into modern day Johannesburg. But while there's some RoboCop elements, there's also some Short Circuit elements, too. If you remember the movie with Johnny Five, Johnny Five is alive. This is like an extremely violent version of Short Circuit. And it has some great concepts in there. There are some really neat ideas that are explored in this film. The idea of consciousness and the idea of the soul and the idea of what makes somebody human and what makes somebody sentient. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of familiar territory we're down. Is it good to have sentient robots? Is this what we want to do? Could it be the downfall of mankind? I don't know. The use of military technology. I mean, Hugh Jackman's character is trying to develop these robots that are essentially giant hulking walking drones. So it dives into the drone argument about whether or not somebody from a terminal hundreds of miles away should be controlling combat vehicles. So there's a lot of ideas being thrown around in here, and they're not fully explored. And it is kind of a mess when it comes to the story. The movie runs about 2 hours. It really should have been tightened and shortened. And there's so much time spent on the corruption of Chappie that it becomes a little bit overdone. But there's still a charmingness to Chappie, voiced by Charlton Copley, who, of course, got onto the scene with District 9. And it does some interesting things. It's not as cohesive as it should be. And there's no real clear villain. You're like, is Sigourney Weaver supposed to be the bad guy? And Hugh Jackman supposed to be the bad guy? But he disappears for like half the movie and you don't hear from him. And then he kind of comes in at the end and is like, shaking his fist and twirling his mustache or twirling his mullet. But overall, I was interested in it. It's not perfect, but it's okay. It's not a kid's movie. Just because it looks like Short Circuit and it's got a cute robot, do not take a kid to this movie. It's rated R for very good reasons. But overall, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I enjoyed it more than most critics, apparently. So I'm going to say Chappie kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Road Hard. That's R-O-A-D. Adam Carolla co-directs himself in his crowd-funded movie about an aging comedian trying to get his career back on track.
You had this amazing career in TV. Now you're going back to your roots.
Yeah, well, you know, I started off as a stand-up, and I wanted to get back on the road with the fans.
I gotta get off the road. It's killing me.
Michael's pilot is getting shot.
Why didn't you tell me?
Well, I was gonna tell you, but I know how depressed you are when you come off the road.
You didn't think I'd be happy for you?
Are you?
Yes! No!
One of the things that's most notable about this is the crowdfunding aspect. And there have been several movies that have come out that are crowdfunded. Obviously, the most well-known one was probably Veronica Mars, which came out about a year ago. And that had a successful Kickstarter campaign. And that one wasn't bad, especially if you've watched the TV show Veronica Mars. It's not a bad show. It's not a bad movie. And it was true to the film. The other Kickstarter-funded films that I've seen, I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen several of them, don't quite measure up to what you'd expect. The Zach Braff movie, was Wish I Was Here, was terrible. It was not good. People were hoping for another Garden State, and they didn't get it. The Sweet Blood of Jesus, which is Spike Lee's Kickstarter campaign film, meh. But what I found kind of impressively shocking about this movie was how on the nose this was to certain aspects of his life. The story is about a comedian who was up and coming and had had this popular show, and then his co-host went on to end up hosting Late Night, and he is sort of trying to get his street cred back together as a comedian. And if you look at it, the show he co-hosted in the film was The Bro Show. Well, he did The Man Show with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel is now the unfortunate king of late night. I hate Jimmy Kimmel. I cannot stand Jimmy Kimmel. I do not find Jimmy Kimmel funny. I've never found Jimmy Kimmel funny. I've always felt he was smug, and I think his humor is really mean-spirited. I just don't like Jimmy Kimmel, but somehow he's popular. I'm done with late night. Give me Conan. I like Conan. But his character in this movie, it's clearly him playing himself. And Jimmy Kimmel's given thanks, and I think Jimmy Kimmel gave money to this movie. So I don't think it's as acerbic as his relationship is with his former co-host in the film. But it is showing the struggles of a modern comedian, especially a modern comedian in his 40s, who's dealing with old relationships and all the problems that people run into, and also the misconception that anybody who's famous is rich. And that's so not true. George Clooney is doing fine, but there's a lot of people that just because you know who they are and they had a TV show years ago does not mean they're rich. And just because they're headliner and they've had some celebrity status does not mean that they're rolling in money. And that's something that people don't understand. I mean, I remember the most present example of that to me was I went out just like 15 years ago. I went out to LA for something. I was doing filmmaking, and there was a guy who was a producer who produced a couple movies. Some not huge movies, but they were like stuff that you'd see on HBO. And I went to go visit him in his house, and he lived in a crappy little apartment in Venice. It wasn't a rat hole, but it was smaller than my place. And it's the reality that just because you're in the entertainment industry does not mean that you're rolling in dough. And sometimes it's a real dog-eat-dog world out there. I like Adam Carolla. I saw his movie The Hammer. I thought that was very funny. This one is also very funny. It has some very, you know, on-the-nose, biting, comedic moments, but it also has some tender moments. And it gives you the sense that Adam Carolla is a real guy. In a wacky world. If you like pulling back the veil and looking at a comedian's life, reminds me a little bit of like what you see in like Louis, the TV show Louis with Louis C.K. So it shows the reality of life as a modern comedian and where there is and is not money and fame. So I'm going to say Road Hard kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Buzzard, the box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Shake that.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr finishing up the show. One final segment to do. We got one more movie to talk about. We are plumb full of films this week. This movie is called Buzzard. It's a much, much smaller film than all the other ones. It's even smaller than Rode Hard. It's a very grassroots independent film coming out on VOD and in theaters now, about a slacker who works as a temp who tries to cheat various systems to get money only to go on the run when he thinks he'll get caught.
Buddy, why do you even need this stuff? You know, we don't even have this type of printer.
Store credit or cash?
Come on, dude.
How long was that break?
3 hours.
3 hours? Dude, this job is awesome.
No, it's not. It's bogus.
I have an easy job for you, Marty.
I'll get to it, Carol, but you know, I got a lot going on around here, so...
You can't just take someone's check and make it yours, man. It doesn't work like that.
There's like private surveillance cameras all over my place.
Don't call the cops. It's not necessary.
Call the cops.
I have to admit, that trailer isn't terribly well representative of the film. It's really hard to encapsulate into a trailer without having too much narration. And ultimately, it's about this guy who is just this ne'er-do-well who has a temp job at this bank. And he runs these really petty scams and jobs that he tries to get money for. Like in the opening scene, he closes his checking account only to reopen it to get the $50 of free money with opening a new bank account. He orders office equipment from his job and then sneaks it out of the office and goes and tries to return it to a retail store. He just exists in this quagmire of nothingness, this world of just sponging off of whatever he can. And one of the things they show is him when he eats, he like at home, he makes like a 2 frozen pizzas and puts chips in the middle of them, like tortilla chips, and then pours ranch sauce over and makes like this, I don't know, this tostada of them, this pizza. It's disgusting. And like later on at one point, he's in a hotel and he just gets spaghetti and meatballs and he's the happiest that he's ever been. He has no aspirations to become any farther along in life than where he currently is. He is the definition of slacker. And it's fascinating to watch because I've known people like this. I've known people who exist just trying to cheat little things, trying to get a free coupon out of something, to not have to buy a Hot Pocket, to be given a Hot Pocket. That is the kind of character this guy is. And it's fascinating to watch because on one hand, you almost side with him. You don't, because he's a real sleaze. And later on, it gets even darker and he gets deeper and deeper into criminal activities, never going much more than the level of petty theft, except for one point that's pretty extreme. So you kind of want to see him survive because it's kind of fascinating to watch, but you also want to see this guy get caught and you want to see this guy get punished because he's so stupid. He is so dumb with the scams he runs. He is likely going to get caught at some point and you're just waiting for that shoe to drop. It also has this weird element of the modern day slacker in their late 20s or even early 30s. He's got a friend of his who he works with as his bank, who he ends up staying with. And the guy is just living with his parents and he's like all excited because he's got this temp job that pays $9 an hour. It's this weird look at characters whose potential is actually really big, but they have no desire to reach anywhere close to that potential and just exist like a sponge in the sea, letting things pass over them. It's such a bizarre movie, but a fascinating movie. Very well done. It was shot in Michigan, and it's worth checking out. It's disturbing at times, but it's also a weird look into human nature. So I'm going to say Buzzer totally rocks. Check that one out if you can get a chance to.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Was I correct? Last week I said $25 million for Focus. I actually was way high on that. And in fact, it came in lower than expectations. What's funny is I saw some notice that the Thursday evening shows looked much more promising, but it only made $18.7 million. Now, when you take into account it just being this adult-oriented, R-rated heist movie, that's not terrible for the last weekend in February. But you throw in Will Smith's box office and his potential in there, and it is not a good box office draw. It is actually pretty miserable for Will Smith. This opened lower than everything else he's ever done. I mean, like, since he became this box office champ. This was not the comeback movie. It was actually kind of a risk to do a comeback movie. He's going to be in Suicide Squad. That's a much more comfortable Will Smith-oriented film. But the thing is, he's not starring in Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad is an ensemble piece. And in fact, the most note right now that's getting is Jared Leto as the Joker. I mean, he cut his hair for the role this week, and it made news. So you will see what happens with Will Smith. I don't know. Sometimes when you disappear like that, it's hard to capture your heyday again, because people, while they like you, they're done with you. It's sort of like Elvis when he was in the 70s before, you know, shortly before his death. Elvis was still playing to fans, but the fans were women in their 30s and 40s, and he was no longer had the screaming kids out there, and he was no longer topping the charts. So what came in next was Kingsman, The Secret Service, at just under 12, and then SpongeBob, 50 Shades. Lazarus Effect did not do terribly well, about $10 million. But actually, that's really good considering how much money was spent on this movie. Horror movies, if you can do them cheap, they will make money, even if they get a terrible cinema score and if the audience generally doesn't like them. I seem to be the only person on this planet who enjoyed watching The Lazarus Effect. Oh, and the other thing that's interesting is American Sniper, it's still in the top 10. It made a little over $7 million last weekend. This weekend, at some point during the weekend, it will likely surpass both Guardians of the Galaxy and Mockingjay Part 1 as the highest grossing film domestically from 2014. That's a little bit of something to take note of. Now, let's talk about this weekend. I'm thinking Chappie's going to win. Chappie's getting the most interest. I think Vince Vaughn, sort of like Will Smith, his best days are behind him in terms of what his shtick that he does, because he hasn't had a real big hit for years. So I don't expect Unfinished Business to do much business. I also think the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel is going to be somewhat soft, simply because it's really just a movie for the older generation, and those that end up going to the theater, it's a small portion of the audience. It's a very narrow market. So Chappie, I think, has a chance to win, let's just say $20 million. I think there's a lot of negative buzz to Chappie. It's getting mixed reviews to bad reviews. I thought it was okay, but overall, I think that's going to suppress it a bit. So it's going to be kind of a slow week at the box office. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it is time for the world-famous DVD Roundup. All right, there's some interesting things happening in DVDs. Two selections I want to talk about are from the Warner Vault. The first one is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the 10th anniversary Blu-ray. While this has come out on Blu-ray before, this is a newly packaged Blu-ray set that includes some artwork and a booklet. And it also has a new in-movie experience. One of the things that Warner Brothers does is they, while there's commentaries on here that were originally packaged with the DVD, they do this branching picture-in-picture stuff for their interactive experience, and that's actually really kind of cool. If you want to watch the movie with some behind-the-scenes stuff embedded in the film. And, you know, and I got to say, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory holds up pretty well. I mean, some of the CGI effects are a little bit cartoonish, but it's okay because the movie's a bit cartoonish. And I have to say, I warmed up a lot to Johnny Depp as Willy Wonka because he's not just redoing Gene Wilder. So that one's definitely worth picking up. There's also musicals, a four-film collection. This is also from Warner Brothers. Most of them MGM musicals that they own the rights to. There are four well-known musicals, The Bandwagon, Calamity Jane, which is actually really pretty good. Doris Day is beautiful. She's way more attractive than Calamity Jane really was in real life. But she's what carries that story. Kiss Me, Kate, which I had not seen yet until I got this Blu-ray collection, and they've remastered it with the 3D Blu-ray, which is neat because you get to see it in stereoscopic 3D in the home video version of it. And while I wasn't wild about the movie itself, it's neat to have in 3D. And then, of course, Singing in the Rain, which is one of the best musicals ever made. So it's a nice set, four movies, and they all have good special features. There's it's not just bare-bone movies. There's also Tinker Bell and the Legend of the Never Beast, which is the latest exploits from Pixie Hollow about Tinker Bell and another fairy who are trying to help this legendary beast that is possibly dangerous, but also might be nice. Foxcatcher, the Oscar-nominated film, is also out. Jaws, the three-movie collection, you know, I mean, Jaws, is the original, has been released many times, but it's nice to get all three movies. You get Jaws 2 and Jaws 3, unfortunately not in 3D. But there's also Outlander, Season 1, Volume 1. I got to throw that in there because my wife loves the series. And the stinker of the week is The Captive, which I reviewed a couple months ago, starring Ryan Reynolds as a guy whose daughter is kidnapped. Not a very good movie. Not worth checking out. That is it. I need to run. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Cinderella and Liam Neeson running in Run All Night. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.